Welcome to Fan Powered Podcast. You're joined with me, Message2L, and I'm back. And you knew, if you knew any part of like the movies that I love, that I would come back for this movie. So I'm going to take you to the best seats, and we're going to talk about the new movie that just came out yesterday as of time of recording. But Oppenheimer, 2023, from the great Christopher Nolan. So let's get into this. So I'm back. Hello. It is just going to be me today. It'll probably most likely just be me for the upcoming future. I do have a couple backlogged podcasts that I might or might not release. We'll see. But here, I'm actually in a currently new setup, technically the same equipment, but in a different room. So I apologize if it's a little echoey, because I don't have as much in this room right now, and I need to keep on furnishing it, and it's coming along, but it is not completely done yet. So if it's a little echoey, I apologize. Also, I have an AC on in the back because it's currently like, what's the temperature right now? It's hot, 77 outside, and I don't have AC, so the AC is in the other room. We're gonna have to keep it on, so I apologize if you hear it in the background. But we are here to talk about Oppenheimer 2023. Oh my gosh. I watched this opening day, a matinee. Well, not opening night. I didn't watch it Thursday night, but I watched it because I didn't want to watch a 3-hour movie that started at like 9 p.m. I watched it at like the earliest showing on Friday. I think it was 9:40. Anyway, still 3 hours long. Didn't get to see it on 77 IMAX, black and white and color film, 70 millimeter. I'm not currently close to either Vancouver, BC or the Bay Area. So those are the closest ones to me. And that is still not very close. But I did get to see it in like IMAX RPX. Don't know what that stands for. I will learn what that stands for. But I did see it yesterday. Super excited. I've written down notes. That's what these podcasts might start becoming like if it is just me, so I don't sound like a rambling fool. I will always sound somewhat like a rambling fool. Maybe this way I'll have more concise thoughts. We'll find out. But let's get into it. If you don't already know, the plot is, via IMDb, during World War II, Lieutenant General Leslie Groves Jr. appoints physicist J. Robert Oppenheimer, I can't read, to work on a top secret Manhattan project. Oppenheimer and a team of scientists spend years developing and designing the atomic bomb. Their work comes to fruition in July of 1945 as they witness the world's first nuclear explosion, forever changing the course of history. I know, it's not actually like, I was looking for a synopsis, and since it's just come out, like none of them are quite encompassing. That's like a good baseline of like, here's what's happening. but a good Christopher Nolan movie, it's just like told in such an interesting way. So by the way, if you didn't already tell by the entirety of most of my podcast, this is going to have a lot of spoilers. And since this is technically kind of a current movie, I would like to say from this point on, there will be spoilers. Sorry, there will be a lot of spoilers. I think I've condensed it down to like a few of the things I want to talk about. So I don't actually know how long this podcast is going to be. We're going to aim for under an hour, just as a side note, but it probably will be way less than that. I don't know. We'll find out. I have a Fresca here to keep my energy up. I'm a little rusty at this, but by the way, okay, if you haven't really gotten the hint, there will be spoilers. So please go watch the movie. Highly, highly suggest going watching the movie. I'll tell you what if I recommend it at the end. If you can't probably already tell, it's going to be kind of a clear evident. But if you would like to discuss this with me, maybe you watched Barbie and you liked Barbie better than Oppenheimer. Tell me, let's talk about it. I do have a Discord. It's not very active, but this weekend I'll keep an eye on it. If you want to talk in the next coming weeks about Oppenheimer, I will be there. I will be there for you. I will geek out about this because it's one of those Christopher Nolan and all of his movies, for the most part, that I've seen are ones that like you want to talk about after. And those are my favorite kind of movies, like, and TV shows. I'm probably like one of the only people that thinks that way nowadays, but I love the discourse around movies. I love the discourse around TV. And, you know, this is one of them. This is you really want to talk to someone after watching this movie. And I watched this alone at a theater at 9 a.m. in the morning,
right after DEQ.
But so I set my my life was pretty mid, and then I watched this movie and it was great. But yes, spoilers. So you have been warned. You've been warned, and you've gotten to like a rant, a ramble for about 2 minutes. So if you didn't catch it, this is spoilers now. Okay, we're starting. So I broke this down and how I want to talk about this movie in three different chunks. It's 3 hours long, so it kind of was easy to chunk it up. And actually, I was keeping an eye on the clock, so to speak, just to see, because I was curious on how one blocks a 3-hour movie. It's one of the longer movies I've seen, and I have seen Dune, which I feel like was 2 hours and 45 minutes. How long is that movie? I think Dune Part 2 is going to be 2-3 hours long. I don't think they actually, do they have a runtime yet for Part 2? I don't know. I feel like it's going to be 3 hours long, if anything. But yeah, no, Dune is 2:35. So yeah, this one's longer. And like, anyway, and I watched Dune. I liked Dune visually speaking. I didn't know much about Dune going into the story and stuff. And honestly, like, I don't know how you'd break up that movie. Like, it didn't have any distinct like chapters, which I feel like in these longer movies you kind of need to have. Like, it needs to have like some kind of structure, or you get lost and then you get bored. I'm just being real with you. So this one I kind of broke up into 3 hours. I think if you watch it and you've seen it, I think it kind of it makes the most sense to me. And I don't know if he looked it out this way. I've been watching a few interviews and so forth about you know, this movie. It's an interesting time because, again, I'm recording this during the writer's strike, so it is an interesting, and SAG joined in on it, so I'm interested to see if there's going to be, if they've held a halt on all press stuff, so this has all happened before or has been recorded before all these strikes. So I'm curious to, and some of those, I also don't remember if SAG is international, if it's just American. But that's beside the point. Tangents here. But can unions be international? You know, if I learned anything from this movie, maybe I would have answered that question. This is actually talked about unions a lot, actually. 1950s and stuff had a lot of that time. Like the early 1900s had a lot of like ideas of unions and stuff like that coming about. And especially in American culture. And I think Peaky Blinders was early 1900s too. So yeah, anyway, moving on. So I broke it down into three parts. The first hour I like to call the man. So we'll start off with the man. Hour two is the bomb, and hour three is the aftermath. So I've broken it down for me to digest in this chunk, so I don't recount a 3-hour movie that takes 3 hours to recount it, because I easily could. So, and let's be honest, I watched it and it didn't feel like 3 hours. So, I mean, I was hungry during it because I didn't have popcorn or water. So, and I had like yogurt 4 to 5 hours before I watched this movie. But like, anyway, I digress. I'm not going to do a complete plot summary because I think that would take way too long, and I'm not good at remembering certain aspects of this movie, like, because of the way Christopher Nolan presents movies and how he tells movies, especially with his like fluidity of like timelines. It's not going to be easy for me to recount specifically, but I broke down into 3 hours, and we'll see what I remember from each hour. But like, I think it's interesting because the first like vignette or the first seeing of Oppenheimer in the early part of his life is the story that's kind of infamous, I guess, about him almost killing his professor at Cambridge, but then doesn't, by putting some kind of poisonous chemical into an apple and leaving it on his desk. I find that it's a very interesting vignette or little like story in this whole big story of his life, right? On how his anger kind of presents itself in a way. And I think the way this movie, I mean, I gotta say, there's probably a motif or whatever you want to call it about how, or just like a theme, maybe it's a theme of anger, like, because throughout this whole time, right, they're trying to prevent the Nazis from creating a bomb first, right? So there's already levels of anger to that you can digest in other places and other more eloquently human words. But it's interesting to see that, like, that this is the first story, or that's the start of his life. That's the first thing he decides to tell about his life in this kind of little story, which I think is interesting. And then early off the bat, you see that this movie is in black and white and it's in color, which is bold. And I love it. but if there's not an end, why did I put an acronym that I can't pronounce at the beginning of this paper of my notes? I do not know. But if I don't see an NYU research paper done on this next year, just missed opportunity. Just what I'm saying. Great, great, great idea for a paper. I'm not going to write it because I hate papers, but would be great to read. And I think I noticed pretty early on that there are different points of view, which I think is really interesting and really fascinating as a storytelling idea, like a frame of reference or whatever you want to call it. But it's an interesting way of presenting an entire movie. So entire movie is just in black and white or it's in color. And Oppenheimer's point of view from that kind, I don't know, timeline is not exactly what I want to say, but I think it's from his point of view, because he can go back in time and talk about something, he can go forward in time and talk about something else, or something that he might have not even seen but have interpreted. It's Oppenheimer's point of view, I think. It's him retelling his life at a security clearance hearing to reinstate it. Trying to keep his job and legacy. That's whatever. And the AEC, there's too many acronyms in this document that I and then the other one, which is in black and white, is Strauss's point of view. I don't remember his first name, and I didn't write it in this paper, and I probably should have. but his point of view is he is under review for a cabinet position at the U.S. government that he has been striving for. I don't think Strauss meets Oppenheimer pretty in like middle point of Oppenheimer's life, but it is told from these points of view. So there's black and white, which is Robert Downey Jr.'s, you know, I guess I haven't said any of their actors' names. and that's all in black and white. And then Oppenheimer's is all in color, which also I think kind of like, it's those two things, easier to digest because it's time. It's you know, different colors, and it's easier to figure out which one we're in. But I also think it's interesting because Oppenheimer is such a genius, and like, you know, he's the father of the atomic bomb, right? He can see the world in like, you know, the quantum mechanic theory or, you know, physicist level of like seeing the world. So his is in color, but Strauss sees it as like a way to get power, a way to have power, and then, you know, legacies and stuff like that, right? You know, the series of actions that we take and the consequences because of that, you know, that whole idea, and which is like the entirety of the movie, which I love thinking about morality questions. Not like whether there's right and wrong. I just like, I like seeing people's interpretations of like that and things. And I thought that was interesting. I also talked about how Oppenheimer's like main qualm was the morality of his, you know, inventions and how to deal with that. And I think Strauss had a more means to an end kind of thing, a more black and white kind of view. Yeah, no, it was really interesting. So cool. So cool. Oh, also, this is going to skip forward quite a bit because I to be honest, the first part of the movie was a little slow for me. It wasn't slow in terms of like boring, because the first hour of the movie, I'm still going to be interested in the movie most of the time, unless I absolutely hate it. And you have seen me absolutely hate movies from the get-go. But this is the getting through the trenches part of the movie, which is around. You need to know all of this like setup in order for the impact to be like really amazing at the end of the movie, really being really thought-provoking. And it's, yeah, no. So it made sense. I will say that there's no scene in this movie that I didn't understand why it was chosen. Like, it was none of them. All of them were good. And it's insane. It's insane to think about how all of it is just made sense why it was there. And it did make sense. And it all a little like side view, different shots. I can't. It's so good. But yeah, this is Gene comes into play, whose name, last name, I can't remember at all, but is played by Florence Pugh and Oppenheimer. And they have, oh, by the way, Cillian Murphy plays Oppenheimer. Didn't tell you that at the beginning, probably should have. There's a fangirl segment in this podcast, and we're going to talk about it there a lot. Gene and Oppenheimer, Oppenheimer and Gene's relationship is very interesting. I think out of all the Christopher Nolan movies, I think this is the first one I've seen with nudity in it, which is interesting. But I will say tasteful nudity. I will say abrupt. Very abrupt nudity. Like, you could sense something was coming, but I did not know I was going to see Florence Pugh's boobs. And I just, so it was abrupt to me. I was also sitting alone and also, if you're going to a movie theater nowadays and you go alone, you can't pick a middle seat between two groups of parties. They make you sit next to either one or the other. And so I sat next to a grandma and her son. And I didn't, or grandma and her grandson. And so I don't have any idea at the age of the grandson, but I felt awkward sitting next to them. Just as a side note, I was like, this is fun. Yeah, no, I thought it was tasteful nudity. I think it only made up about maybe 10 to 15 minutes of the 3-hour runtime movie. So not a lot of nudity. If we're going to pull it, probably more swearing. I was going to pick the rating apart, which actually I don't know the rating of this movie. Should I have looked that up before I'm assuming it's R because of the nudity. Yeah, it's R. I'm assuming, the budget was $100 million. We'll see how much. Actually, I'm really curious how much the box office will come from that. Because first of all, it is a star-studded cast. Like, it has a ton of stars in it in varying roles. Like, it's insane. But I mean, let's be honest, if you got a call from Christopher Nolan asking to be in a movie, I would 100% say yes. Like, you wouldn't second guess that question. You'd be like, yeah, I'm doing it. I'm scared, but I'm doing it. You know what I mean? It was two brief sex scenes involving extended breast nudity. Thank you, IMDb. People thought that was mildly helpful. Moderately helpful. Violence and gore. Actually, not any very, it's verbal references, if anything, not very graphic, which I found appreciating, actually. I forget that drugs and alcohol smoking is a category for that. Often smoking cigarettes. He died from lung cancer or throat cancer. So yeah, he's definitely going to be smoking in like all of these scenes. Frightening and intense scenes. It's severe. If you couldn't guess that from any part of knowing who Oppenheimer or the Manhattan Project is. If you didn't know, this was going to be a little frightening. Then you just don't take. Also, there was a supposed suicide scene, except for I think we assumed that she might have been, she was going to kill herself, but then she might have gotten murdered. Anyway, we love a good open-ended question. Actually, I will say this is probably one of Nolan's movies that actually kind of ends definitively, because we kind of know how that guy died, or like we know most of his story. I don't know. Not his like. Well, also Dunkirk, I guess, when you're talking about these pseudo biographical documentary-esque movies that, you know, that probably can't be as open-ended as I will rewatch Inception after this at some point. Because I've been wanting to for a while. So if you want another best seats like this, but for other movies, please let me know. I'd love to know if you like this. I really do love Inception. I haven't watched it maybe in 5 years, maybe 10 years, maybe five. I think I've watched it since it came out, but because I did watch that in the theaters. I think that was only PG-13. Anyway, that didn't have any nudity. I think American audiences are becoming more comfortable with nudity. I don't know if, which is interesting. France and England and Europe have been fine with nudity for years, but America has always been. But yeah, no. So that's like the first chunk of the movie. And then for me, the second hour is all about sound design and the bomb, right? The bomb. So the second whole hour of the movie, I think is dedicated to the bomb. If you didn't know, this is Oppenheimer is gathering a group of scientists. He is getting ready to go and make the atomic bomb, which after I watched this movie, I've inadvertently watched a lot of a handful of movies. Don't come for me, the FBI. Only stuff about Oppenheimer. Series of how this bomb was different from other bombs. And then also just like what the hydrogen bomb was, because that was also touched in this movie. And I think by the time I took AP US history, yeah, I took an AP history class. What did I learn? Silence. I don't know if we went too deeply into World War II. I think World War II and the Korean War and the Vietnam War, that's around the time where we ended the class. Not sure why, because I feel like that might be where I think I would have gone back to front. No, wait, now to then. I feel like that would be a more interesting way of telling history, to be honest. Someone probably has. This was around the time, like, you kind of stop. I think one class we did read Anne Frank, The Diary of Anne Frank, and like maybe that was the extent. I think actually I might have a book somewhere in the depths of my garage. I think of a guy that came and talked, and he was in a world war. I can't remember which one now. And I actually bought his book because I thought he was an interesting old man. Have it. Didn't read it. But I did actually go to his, like, he had a talk at our high school. And I don't know how we got that. Don't know how I was invited to that talk. But yeah, no, it was, maybe I'll read that book one day. Who knows? But I think in this chapter of the movie, for me, the most interesting thing was the sound design. Obviously, anyone who remotely likes Christopher Nolan has known that, like, he and sound design are like, he really believes that, like, all the different ways you tell how a movie is made through, like, visuals, through sound, through music, every part of that is important. And I feel like in every movie, he's like very, very conscious of the sound design and decisions of when and how a movie is told. And this is the part of the movie where it's the most interesting. Like, yeah. And so, yeah, just thousands of things come out of my mind. But the majority of this movie is actually very, very cacophonous. Like, it is very, it's like very chaotic, because him figuring out all of these different things about, you know, quantum theory, how to split an atom, how to make it a chain reaction, these kind of things, make us set a bomb off, are very loud things. And it is very told throughout all of his movie, and how it is to have like a brain that never stops, that kind of thing. And so for most of this movie, it's actually very loud, which was really cool. The RPX chairs, and I think they're I don't really know what the term butt kicker chairs means in Regal, but I think it means you can feel it in the seats, which I don't know if everyone wants their butt to actually be kicked. I'd rather just say vibrating seats. Little more sexual, but I feel like it's a little less aggressive than butt kicker seats. Or is that the term that you can lie like almost flat or like lounged? I don't know. But anyway, we're moving on. This movie, really, you could feel it like everywhere, which was so cool. Highly recommend. if you're going to go see this movie, try to go for a matinee for that, and it'll be fun. I think it was $16, which is still expensive, but it's a matinee, so you get like nicer people usually, or old people. A lot of old people were in the sea. It was me, a lot of old people, and a lot of boys. It was like no one was dressed as Barbie in this movie, so I knew I was in the right theater. But yeah, no, especially when the apex of this movie, you know, is going to be, we're all like saying, when's the bomb going to go for it? When's the Trinity test going to happen? It was so cool to anticipate it being so loud and also have, but he chose to have at the beginning of the scene, deafening silence, which was so, and just breathing, which is so intense. And I was like, I knew one of those people that, I love how movies are made and I love the decisions that go into making a movie. So in my mind, I was like, this is either going to go two ways. And part of me knew it was going to be silent, which I know is kind of like a little narcissistic or a little like nerd. But like in my mind, I was like, because this movie has been so loud for literally the last hour and the most serious parts are deafeningly silent, like I knew it was going to be silent for a while. I didn't know the breathing was going to be in there. So that was a nice touch and hearing like, because, you know, I think we've all had an adrenaline rush where you're like either falling or like you think you're going to crash or you think you're going to get injured or something and time slows down and you can only hear yourself breathing. Like you can only hear that. That kind of like thing. And so I think that's like really, really cool. And like, that's amazing. Like, I love it. And because I love the idea of the sentence deafeningly silent, it's kind of like this like oxymoron. You're like, how can something be deafening and also be silent? And that is like the perfect example of something like that. Because he blows the entire screen. Every like picture you see of the people when the bomb goes off is almost white, which is really cool. Cause if we're talking about the black and white thing, it's kind of cool, except for the fact that Strauss wasn't there. So, but it's all like blindingly white. And then seconds later you get the shockwaves I don't know what the word is. Cause your girl took physics and we did, your girl did. I think I passed the class, but I did not pass that test. I took AP physics. Did I learn anything? No. I love the idea of things, but like Oppenheimer, I'm not good with math. I'm not good with that kind of math. Which is kind of cool. You're like, I have an idea of how this is supposed to work, but any of the calculations are going to be wrong. Oh, we're one of the... Anyway, I feel you, man. I can only do simple math here. Yeah, no, it was... The whole sound design throughout this entire movie was amazing. Amazing. And this is also when he starts to deal with the consequences of his actions. He's kind of a flirt. He kind of, you know, has affairs with Jean, who's played by Florence Pugh. We start seeing the consequences of his actions during this because I think he sees he's being tailed for like ever now because the U.S. government tails people. We're going to go there. He's had this speckled past because he's had associations with a lot of communist people in the community, all the people who really want unions, which in that time was communists. I think even in one of the scenes where Emily Blunt is being asked about her husband, Kitty, is being asked about Oppenheimer, she makes the distinction of there's two different kinds of communists. And I think like at this point in time, when we look back on history, yeah, they're the ones that, you know, the Nazis that wanted to, you know, absolute Aryan lineages and stuff like that. And then there were people that just wanted like unions, which even saying that now sounds like... How could anyone have like mixed those two together? But in the time of war, everyone's paranoid, which we'll talk about later in hour three, kind of how the paranoia of everything is happening and stuff like that. But yeah. And so he's being questioned, and this is kind of where the whole, you're like, oh, his hearing is going to go fine. And this is where all the hearings go bad. They start going bad here. But he finds out that Jean was going to kill herself, but then possibly was murdered, he suspects, because he's a genius and can just like learn an entire language in 3 months or whatever, which is fascinating. That is not something I could ever do. Language was not my forte, but he was an eloquent man. He had a lot of affairs. he had a way with words. But then what I thought was interesting is that the sound choice for when the bomb happened was also similar to the sound decisions after when he was about to give his speech right after the Trinity tests, which I found very interesting. So there you go. I don't really know how to go bad about that, but like, I think he's starting to realize it right here at the, you know, like that right after the hour. Right before the hour 3 mark, he's realizing there's some morality question, like morality situations that he might have not been fully aware of when he started the making of this. The morality questions of like, no, if someone else does it, it would be worse than what it is. And then, or maybe it wouldn't have been. Very interesting choices. It's interesting. Sound design. All about hour 3. Hour 2 was the sound design. So now let's talk about hour 3. We've talked for a long time, and it's now the third hour, the last hour of the movie. This is titled The Aftermath, and I think that is true. I think this is, I wrote down one of the views you can look at this movie as. It's the story of both men's angers with the that come with consequences. I think for Oppenheimer, it's for me, in my opinion, this is all my opinion, Oppenheimer's blindness to reality for a life's passion kind of is like the thing he's on the fence about. I think in one interview, Cillian Murphy said a way to look at Oppenheimer's view is that he's dancing with raindrops. Between the raindrops or something, which is, I think, one of the first visuals you have in the film, which is amazing. Again, every scene has a purpose. And that is what I like about Christopher Nolan movies. I come in and know that there's every scene almost has a purpose, or any scene like helps illustrate this idea and this like narrative, which I love. But yeah, I think he, even in like actual, like, so now I've seen like actual like videos of him. he can read Sanskrit, which is crazy. You can see in his face and his like eyes and stuff, which is the window to the soul, that he's living with the guilt of creating a weapon of mass destruction. He wasn't the guy who he wasn't the in charge of who of like actually using it against other humans, but living with the guilt that he built something that could destroy the entire world, which is insane. He also at that point he also had a lot of trouble with them and with affairs and associations with communists. His brother was once a communist. The person he had an affair with was a communist. His wife before he was married was a communist, a known communist, not like a Nazi, but the American communist. But he's now realizing the consequences of all those things towards the end of his life. And during this last aftermath is really focused on those hearings. And so he was denied security clearance, thus I think ending his career, so to speak, in politics. And maybe some physics. I don't really know. Who knows? Yeah. And then for Strauss's paranoia was fueled by humiliation. And so in his strive for power. So he, at this point of the movie, he's revealed to have orchestrated how to bring Oppenheimer down because he was humiliated by Oppenheimer a couple times during the span of his life. And there is this one scene that is so good. I'll get ahead of myself. Because of this, Rami Malek, which is in, who I was like consciously, I'm like, this guy, first of all, great actor. I haven't seen him in a ton because I, embarrassingly enough, have not seen Bohemian Rhapsody yet I own it. We're not going to talk about it. maybe I'll watch it soon. Maybe. I don't know. I was like, oh, he has not had that many lines this movie. But all of his lines came at the end of the movie. And I was like, how has he not had a line throughout this whole movie yet? He's a great actor. He had lines later. But I mean, there were a ton of good actors in this movie. I cannot stress that enough. But he testified against Strauss's appointment in this cabinet of whoever. And then he ended up being, I think, the first cabinet member to be denied cabinetship or whatever you want to call it. And it says like 1925, which I guess is only 20 years at this point, but like maybe 30. But yeah. And then he acted like he knew five steps ahead, but then he did not get what he wanted. And maybe ruined his career. I don't know. What I've learned is that it's apparently really hard to ruin someone's career, even if you kill someone. But that was from, you know, Hamilton. Oh, okay. And so this scene, the ending scene. What I love is a good callback. And I don't mean that. When I think about it, I say that, I think, oh, you know, it's a movie you see it at the beginning of the end. No, this is like an embedded scene that kind of is fueled this most of this movie. Like, so it's a scene where Oppenheimer is seeing like what this appointmentship at this school could be like, that Strauss is like, I think, heading or whatever. This is after the bomb. And also Albert Einstein is there and he's throwing rocks in the pond. And Oppenheimer's like, oh, yeah, I know Albert Einstein. And then he goes out and sees Albert. And they're talking near this pond, and Strauss can't see what they're talking about from the window. And eventually he goes up and then Albert Einstein's like walking off. And then he's like, you soured my relationship with Einstein. And he never knew what that conversation they talked about was. And that started his whole journey of destroying Oppenheimer through, you know, the hearing for his security clearance, how he basically engineered that whole group to be like, no, he doesn't deserve clearance, and then ruining his career. And then the humiliation that he did about isotropes, shipping isotropes, which didn't know was a thing. And so this whole scene is basically not the MacGuffin of sorts, but it's like kind of like that. It's like the motive for at least Strauss's point of view for the black and white section of the movie. And so at the end of the movie, we've seen this scene a couple times in black and white or in color in various ways. But this is the first time at the end. The last scene is the first time that you see him, that what they actually talked about in color. So, and it's crazy because they don't talk about Strauss at all. And so you can be like, oh man, he based his whole like, this was his biggest downfall, was assuming that it was about him, the narcissist kind of view of wanting power and getting it right and having everyone do stuff for him, that kind of thing. But it's really interesting that like, so Oppenheimer's like, remember when I came to you and I, with the idea that the atomic bomb could destroy the entire world's atmosphere? And Albert's like, yeah. And then Oppenheimer's like, it already did. And you're like, oh, I literally teared up at that. Like, because that's the first time Oppenheimer's full realization of the consequences of his creation, like fully. I think that's the start of the consequences of what his creation did. And that's also the beginning of Strauss's paranoia. So it's like such like a full circle kind of moment. And I'm like, oh, I love it. So good. Just that kind of storytelling is amazing to me. Literally, I teared up. Like, I shouldn't have teared up at that point in time, but it was just so beautiful. And like the impact of knowing this scene from the beginning to and then seeing the full scene to the end is just, I just cannot like in it not feel bad or campy. And it's just like, oh, I love it. I love it. Okay. This is a good segue. You know me. This show is called Fan Powered Podcast. I need to fangirl for a moment, okay? We talked seriously for the last 45 minutes. You can give me 5 minutes of fangirling, okay? And I have to start off with the obvious. Cillian Murphy is so freaking hot. I cannot. He was hot 10 years ago. He's still hot now. I can't. He's 45. He is way above the Sebastian Stan line. He's like 5 years, I think, ahead of it. I think Sebastian's 40 now. Wow, I should have checked that before I said anything, but I think he... Watch me put in 3 letters. Oh, nope, 4. Oh, no. Oh, wait, can I spell? No. 1, 2. I can put in 3 letters in Sebastian's desk. He's 40 now, okay? Okay? Cillian Murphy's 5 years older than that line, and he's still freaking hot. I cannot deal, okay? It is insane. His eyes are beautiful, which is like half the reason I think, which when Christopher Nolan finished writing the script and then was looking at the book called, I think, I, Prometheus or something, which is a reoccurring analogy in the film, because that's what this screenplay was based on. He was just looking at the blue eyes and you're like, oh my God. He was like, yeah, Cillian Murphy is perfect for this. And I'm like, yes, he is. He is perfect. He is like, he has like practiced his like 1,000-mile stare into the camera with Peaky Blinders for seasons and years. And it's just amazing. And they've worked together obviously for like 20 years now, which is insane. It's also insane when you think I'm only 27. And so most of my life, they've been working together, and most of my life, he's been hella hot. So there you go. And I'm also really glad that this is probably the best movie for him to have his first starring role with Nolan. And I'm so excited. It was so good. Okay. We're going to come back to him for a second. But like, that is like that was part serious, part fangirl. Okay. So given, I hope that there's so many people in this cast. There's like Matt Damon. There's Kenneth Branagh. There's Brawl. I don't have an English accent. I can't pronounce that to the nth degree. Okay. But there's Emily Blunt. There's so many good people in this movie that I haven't even talked about. Jason Clarke, who is creepy as shit, and I feel like he was in a movie where he was, I have seen him before in a creepy as shit role, I think, I don't know, but like, for my generation, I'm like, Josh Peck and Jack Quaid, like, I'm so happy they got to be in a Christopher Nolan movie. Like, they were probably like, oh my God, I can't wait until I see an interview with Josh Peck talking about this movie, because I want to see it. I want to be like, how did you feel? Because I would have fangirled the entire time. Especially since Christopher Nolan for like 20 years, right, has been like one of the best directors of all time in my life, living directors. And I am just so jealous. I would have fangirled the entire time. I've been like, oh my God. Oh my God. Also, Florence Pugh, we've talked about her a lot on this podcast. I love her. She's great at acting, tasteful nudity. And also, I'm very jealous of her scene partner. I'm going to admit it. I'm jealous. She's been with some good scene partners. I'm jealous of the ones she's got to be with, okay? Harry Styles. That's what wet dreams are made of, okay? 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 Also, Emily Blunt. This is like part series, part fangirl. This movie reminded me of how good of an actor she is, because some of the movies she's picked in the last 5 to 10 years have not been great, or ones that I wouldn't have watched. Like, I haven't watched A Quiet Place. I haven't watched Mary Poppins. I looked into watching that one with, what's his name? I want to say Jason, and it's not Jason. It's, the issue is I know his nickname, which is the Golden Torso, which is not good. Oh no. Fifty Shades of Grey. Jamie Dorian. There we go. That was, I looked into watching that. That movie did not get the best reviews, so I haven't watched it yet. I also didn't love the story. I didn't like want to watch it. I don't know. She's picked things that like I wouldn't have personally watched, and not all of them are hits, but she is really good at acting in this one. I'm reminded that she's a good actor. I just don't watch all the stuff that she makes, which is fine. I have somehow watched most of Florence Pugh's work, except for the ones that I can't watch because I'll be terrified of. So yeah, literally just looked at my door like, oh my God. Okay. So final thoughts, summarizing this entire podcast. If you somehow skipped to the end of this, it didn't catch the spoilers. This, I probably won't have spoilers in it. So there you go. But oh my God, it was so good. I'm going to be consciously thinking about this movie for a while. I'm going to buy this movie most likely. At some point I should get a TV so I can actually watch this on a TV and not my phone. Past that. What I love about it is that the vision of this movie was there and it was present through the whole movie. And it's a long movie. It's a 3-hour movie. If you lose the vision, I could easily see you lose the vision in this movie, but it was beautiful. Christopher Nolan, as I've said before, best living director of all time. Probably my most watched and most followed director that I personally like, because I love the ideas of time. I love the idea of having a movie that we talk about. And I love ambiguity, but I also love the actors he chooses for everything he does. Everything's amazing. Okay. It's the subtle choices to the big choices. I love them all. The sound in this movie is so integral, because like when you think of a bomb, right, you think of boom and you think of explosion, and both were amazing. Okay. He's both a king at this. But I obviously love that he has a very conscious decision for sound design in his movies. But I will note, it's like one of the first movies that I've seen with him that's not Zimmer, which I think is interesting. It's this guy. It's a man called Ludwig Göransson. And I'm sorry if I'm pronouncing that wrong. Didn't search how you pronounce it. But he also did Black Panther and The Mandalorian. So, and I've watched The Mandalorian and I can see he might be the next day. I don't know. He's really good. He's really good. Like, I really liked it for this. I probably can't watch this, listen to the score without watching the movie, but it was really good. It was really good. And apparently he made the score like 5 days, which is insane. 5 days? I think he wrote it longer, but I think he's actually like got musicians to play it in 5 days, which is insane. Insane. For a movie that's 3 hours long? Fuck. That's insane. Okay. My overall thoughts of this movie. What is it, a recommend? Yes, it's a recommend for me. Like, I don't know if you listened to this whole thing and thought I would hate it, that you were wrong. It is titled Best Seat. This whole podcast title is Best Seats for a reason. It's because I love this movie. It is amazing. I will note, it's probably not a movie for everyone. Like, if you don't like thinking about your movies, like, oh, that sounded so hypocritical. That sounded so bad. If your person just like wants action or romance, those are not the things you're going to get from this. I think if you appreciate the craftsmanship of making a movie, then yes, you should 100% watch this. If you don't, that's fine. You might not like, it's a long movie. If you don't like the craftsmanship, if you don't like the Oppenheimer as a story, the Manhattan Project, if you don't care about World War II, you don't care about rights. No. If those aren't your jam, then they're not your jam. You're not going to want to watch this movie. But if you like any of those things, if you like, it's an important moment in history. It is a change in history. I think it's crazy. There's two things I think are crazy. One, the idea that there was a near zero possibility of, after setting off this bomb, they would have blown up they would have destroyed the entire world. That was a near zero possibility, but it was crazy to think that was a possibility to begin with. They couldn't stop the train reaction, which is interesting. And also, a thing that I am embarrassed to admit, I didn't know when Einstein died. I thought he was in the 1800s. I did not know that he lived through parts of World War II. Or if all of it, I think. I didn't know that. It's cool. It's crazy to think that two of the best, arguably, like, physicists or whatever in time, right? Einstein, theory of relativity, whatever, and Oppenheimer, the guy who made the bomb. Like, it's crazy to think that those two people were in the same wavelength. It's like crazy to think that we're in the same wavelength as like Beyonce or Miley Cyrus. Like, those is crazy, you know? One Direction. Like, but yeah, I honestly, if you, yeah, I highly suggest watching this movie because it is really interesting to see the man behind one of the most important moments in history, you know, and one of the most deadly. So, you know, it's interesting. I also spelled caveat with an E. I don't think you spelled caveat with an E. I think there's a U in it. Anyway, I also found it was really interesting that he wasn't good at math. I'm like, girl, that's crazy. Anyway, yeah, you'd think I would have looked. I've also, while talking with this with mom, with not any spoilers, it's interesting, like, just throughout school, you like learn history through different lenses. I get through U.S. history, so you learn it from the view of the U.S., then you learn, or the if you took AP Euro, you took it through the lens of European history. I've done a lot of media stuff. I have a minor in media studies, so I learned media through the media lens. So, like, it was interesting to see the McCarthy era mentioned in here. It was interesting to see, to learn about all, like, the video aspects of this, because there are video, like, you know, archives about the Trinity Project in the Manhattan. Yeah, no, it was really interesting to see, and like to see it like actually like destroy someone. We learned about the McCarthy era and like how it was like, you know, goose hunt of people and not the views of conservative America, and how they tried to attack it. But it's interesting to see like actually how it attacked people, because I don't think you kind of view that kind of history in like an abstract lens, but it's interesting to see it in practice. So yeah, no, I would highly recommend it. I would love to know your thoughts as well. Again, we have a Discord. It's in the description down below if you want to become part of that fam and talk about this movie, because it's a movie you want to talk about. If you want to follow me on any social media platforms, it's message2l, which is MessageTol on all social media platforms. I have a Threads that's current now. I don't know if I'm doing it well. Who knows? But yeah, I have Instagram, Threads. I have YouTube as well. But yeah, follow. I'd prefer if you followed me, if you did follow this podcast on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcasts. It would be great. If you're in Spotify, there'll be questions I would love to hear your answers to in the episode description. But yeah, I hope that you guys have a great day, and maybe I'll hear you. Maybe I'll talk to you soon. Oh, by the way, I am really curious if you want another podcast recommend. We Hate Movies will have probably a podcast out to talk about box office numbers for, I think today when I'm releasing this podcast. So you should go listen to that. I'm really curious on how Oppenheimer versus Barbie did in the box office, because those are probably the two biggest movies to come out this year as of this time. So maybe it was Avatar this year. No, I feel like that was last year. Anyway, moving on. Yeah. Really curious about that. Okay, have a great day, guys. Bye.